Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Slash Filmcast, the official podcast of SlashFilm.com. I'm David Chen, and with me is...
Devendra Hardwar.
And welcome to the show. It's just going to be us two tonight, because Jeff Cannata is off doing a Totally Rad Show reunion tonight. We're actually recording roughly the same time. And so, Devendra, we're playing like musical chairs in the Slash Filmcast. Last week, I wasn't here. This week, Jeff's not here. Rest assured, though, I'm pretty sure we're all going to be here next week for our review of Ghost in the Shell. But yeah,
the biggest movie of the summer, yes, or spring.
That movie is shaping up to be quite a disaster. I feel like Paramount's betting a lot on it, and I think they need it to make, you know, $400-500 million for it to be a success. And I think it's going to have a hard time getting to that. So we'll see what happens with that movie. But yeah, I am back from vacation. I was in Hawaii for 10 days. I've learned so much about life outside of the mainland, Devendra.
You should never come back. Basically.
Like why I should never come back. I had several, you know what's funny? We had several Lyft drivers, all of whom were crazy in some way. and I'll have, maybe if we have an after dark, I can tell you a little bit about that.
Yep.
But happy to be back, and happy to be back on the Slash Filmcast. And if you're just tuning in for the first time, what we do here on this podcast is we talk through what we've been watching, we talk through some of the week's film news, and then we conclude every week with an in-depth review. This week, we'll be reviewing Daniel Espinosa's newest film, Life, starring Ryan Reynolds, Rebecca Ferguson, and Jake Gyllenhaal. Major all-star cast there. So looking forward to diving into that new sci-fi thriller with you, Devendra. Find more episodes of this podcast at slashfilmcast.com. You can always email us at slashfilmcast@gmail.com. Before we get to any of the events of this week's episode, though, we have a contest this week. We have a Blu-ray of the Martin Scorsese film Silence to give away. That's the new Blu-ray for Martin Scorsese's film Silence. Devendra, I don't think you were on our review of Silence, were you?
No, I was there.
Oh, you were there. Okay, okay.
Yeah,
we had an after dark that you weren't there for. That's right.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, the Blu-ray is coming out on it's actually, by the time you listen to this, it'll probably be out. And that was a beautiful film. It was nominated for Best Cinematography at the Oscars. And it's a movie that I certainly thought demands your attention. It's worth checking out. So you're sitting at home. You're listening to this podcast. You're wondering, how can I win this Silence Blu-ray? Well, to be entered in, all you got to do is email slashfilmcast@gmail.com and tell us what is your most religious movie-going experience. Now, you can interpret that any way you want. Maybe it's the time you went to go see, you know, Fireproof with Kirk Cameron. Maybe it's the time you saw The Matrix the first time. You know,
yes.
However you want to interpret it, what is your most religious movie-going experience? You'll be entered in to win a copy of the Blu-ray. I can tell you pretty much, you know, right now that if you just write in and say one word, you know, you say, oh, I saw the Matrix, or one sentence, like, I went to see The Matrix, you know, that is not going to win. Instead, give us like a paragraph, a few sentences, give us some color, let us know what it is. So email slashfilmcast@gmail.com. In the subject line, put Silence Blu-ray Contest. Silence Blu-ray Contest in the subject line.
How are you spelling Blu-ray?
BLU-RAY. It can be either one. I'll filter both.
Okay.
Silence Blu-ray Contest. And in the body of the email, write in your most religious movie-going experience. You have until Friday, 5 p.m. Pacific time, to email in your contest entry. That's Friday, March 31st, 5 p.m. Pacific time, to email in your entry for the Silence Blu-ray Contest. Again, subject line, Silence Blu-ray Contest, most religious movie-going experience, slashfilmcast@gmail.com. Friday, March 31st, and winners will be reached out to within the next week or so. So looking forward to giving that Blu-ray away, and we hope to do some more giveaways in the weeks to come. Let's get to what we've been watching this week. Devendra Hardwar, I had a chance to watch a ton of stuff while I was on the plane, as well as while I was in Hawaii. And one of the things I watched was this Iron Fist show that's on Netflix. Now,
I've not heard anything about this show.
Here's the thing about Iron Fist. This is remarkable. This is, I think, the first Marvel television show that has gotten roundly derided by all critics. Just everyone is just heaping loads of hatred onto this show, Iron Fist. And for a lot of the people in the Asian community, it comes from the kind of cultural appropriation, you know, that even though the original comics had a white character who was, you know, the Iron Fist character, that, hey, that was written decades ago and we should update it to be, you know, consistent with the times. You know, why not have an Asian person actually in the main role? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, for me, as a Chinese person, I was very curious to see what this was all about, because I cannot really criticize a show too much without actually having watched it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I watched the first episode of Iron Fist, and what was remarkable to me, Devendra, is the cultural appropriation, the whitewashing, whatever you want to call it, is the least heinous part of this show. It is probably, yeah. if I was writing an essay about what was wrong with the show, it wouldn't show up until page 6, the Asian appropriation. In fact, if an Asian person played the main character, I might be more bothered because this show is terrible, right?
I was actually thinking about that too. Like, is it a good thing that kind of saved it? You know,
here's what's wrong with the show. Let's list a few of this show's crimes. Firstly, I think the biggest issue is Finn Jones, who plays the role of Danny Rand, is totally bland, unlikable, smarmy. His character is very inconsistent. He's creepy. Like, he approaches this Asian female character, Colleen Wing, right? And even though she tells him to leave multiple times, he doesn't.
I love how he approaches her speaking Chinese as well. So right.
Which is
I've seen many times on a college campus.
Yes,
of like guys trying to talk to girls, and it's like, oh, this is where we're going, and you're the good guy. I'm supposed to be rooting for you.
Never fails to disappoint. That move. In all seriousness, do not try that. It will not go over. And actually, to the show's credit, it depicts how that typically goes over, which is not well. But yeah, Danny Rand is a total nothing burger of a character. And not only that, like, his fight choreography is pretty unconvincing, I would say. So that is the biggest issue with the show, in my opinion. But even in the first episode, there was a bunch of other very, very odd problems. A homeless character shows up out of nowhere simply to provide exposition, only to be killed off later unceremoniously. And it is just the most bizarre side character ever. He exists to do nothing except further the plot.
Yeah. Well, I think they're positioning, you know, Danny Rand right now. He is basically a homeless guy trying to reclaim his lost fortune and everything. But it seems like they're going about that in the worst way possible.
Yeah, right. He's not a character that you can really root for, and maybe, you know, maybe that's a challenge, is they start him off really unlikable. But I don't think he's supposed to be unlikable. Like, I think you're supposed to be rooting for him from the get-go, but really all the people around him who are trying to stifle him, who are trying to say, wow, this guy is crazy, they're the ones who are the audience surrogates, right? They're the people, like Ward Meacham, he is the one who you really relate to. It's not Danny Rand.
Even though he's like an American Psycho dude in training.
Right.
You know, like, yeah.
He is the Marvel Universe's version of Donald Trump Jr.
It's, you know, amazing.
But he's the one who I had the most sympathy for, which I think the show, that is the show failing at what it's trying to do.
Right, right. I mean, it fails on every level, right? It fails to give us any sympathy for Danny Rand, really. It just kind of starts out of nowhere of him just walking into this company and, like, you know, he's barefoot, he's disheveled, he's trying to talk to somebody. It's like, you know, he was gone for a while, but he's not an idiot, right? Like, he can see himself and be like, maybe this is not the best way to approach.
He has zero self-awareness. He has zero self-awareness throughout the whole episode.
Right. Yeah. And then, yeah, the second scene is that terrible fight scene where he's beating up the guards for doing their job. Like, that's really it. This is some homeless asshole off the street who's beating up these poor security guards.
But you know, I was talking about moving the plot along. That is a very liberal way of describing what happened to the show. I mean, the same plot points are repeated over and over again. It's like, oh, hey, maybe is that the real Danny Rand? Maybe it is, but probably not. What it feels like watching this show.
You know, if Daredevil could make us feel sympathy for the Punisher, which is a, he's a really harsh character, right? Like, we're introduced to the Punisher just murdering people, but he's murdering bad guys, and like, he has pathos and sympathy, and we know who he is. So by the end of Daredevil season two, the Punisher ends up being, you know, one of the most memorable and interesting Marvel characters. Here, the hero of the show can't even manage that.
Right. So, and, you know, people might ask, well, what about the other Marvel shows, David? Do you like those? I have not watched all of them, but I watched Daredevil, and I quite enjoyed that. Daredevil season one. So it's not as though I think, you know, the whole enterprise of Marvel Netflix shows is creatively bankrupt. I just think this is a particularly egregious example of a poorly put together show. Mm-hmm. There's just shoddy workmanship all along. It feels almost like a student film level. Like, that that is how bad the production values are, and the choreography is, and the acting is, and the script is. It just doesn't feel well put together.
It does. It feels like it was made by people who've never seen a TV show or a movie before. Like, that opening fight scene is just like a bunch of quick cuts of like nonsense movement, and I can't tell what the hell is going on. There is a scene, if you search around on Twitter, there's a scene where Danny Rand has to jump over a taxi cab that's driving towards him on the street. And even like, so
it's a big moment.
Like, oh my god, this guy has skills. The very first shot of that scene is a black SUV coming at him. And in the cut, it is switched to a taxi cab. And even then, like, what he does is just like a really generic flip type thing that's chopped up several times. So it doesn't even look
good. It looks ridiculous. It looks ridiculous.
It looks insane.
There's stuff like this all throughout the episode. For instance, the homeless guy says, "Hey, I have a phone. I can Google whatever you want for no reason." And then Danny Rand says, "Yeah, Google Danny Rand." And he searches Danny Rand. And when they cut to the close-up of the phone, he's in the Photos app. He has a screenshot of a website. And so it's very obvious he's not looking at the actual internet.
They couldn't even make a website.
Well, Devendra, it's not even that good. It's that you can just tap the Photos app and make the UI go away. And they didn't even do that. Like, it clearly is showing he's in the Photos app.
Well, so Dave, I've seen all of the Marvel Netflix shows, and I like them all for very different reasons, because I think the big thing is they've all been about something, right? Something more. Daredevil was a lot about his like sense of his sense of guilt. There's a lot going on there with that character and what he's dealing with. He's like a more down-to-earth superhero. Jessica Jones was all about, you know, female empowerment and men stepping on women in many ways. Luke Cage was all about the black experience in Harlem. This show is about nothing. It is about absolutely nothing other than some asshole billionaire.
Well, I think it's unintentionally about white male entitlement.
That's really what it is.
But that's not what it wants to be about, I don't think.
It could have gone so many different ways, too. Like, if it, I think fundamentally what fails here is the showrunners and the writers. Like, nothing about how the show is put together feels good. I'm not interested in anything going on here. I don't know if I'm going to keep watching. Maybe I will, just to like be complete and just to actually talk about the show, you know, with some sort of like experience with it. But yeah, I just don't care about anything, and that's a damn shame.
It's been fascinating to observe the reaction to this show, because Marvel has generally been regarded as that company that can do no wrong, but this show and the critical reaction to it shows you that, hey, if they mess up, people will call them on it, and if they start getting lazy, you know, and it, the reaction has been so vociferous too. It's just, I think Gizmodo put out an article of, here's all the stuff that happens at Iron Fist so you don't have to watch it, so that you can be ready for the Defenders, you know? I just have rarely seen this kind of hatred against a Marvel property in the last few years. So it's
pretty rough, but entirely deserved.
All the people who think Marvel is paying critics to, you know, praise their stuff, I point to Iron Fist as Exhibit A. Of when people won't put up with just anything that they shovel onto our TV. Mm-hmm. So that's Iron Fist. It's on Netflix. I I don't think I can watch the rest of the show.
You have other Netflix Marvel shows to watch, Dave. You should watch Luke Cage. You should at least watch more of Jessica Jones, too.
Yeah, I'm open to checking out a few episodes of those and see if we get to the end of them. But all right, other things I've been watching this week, Devendra. I saw a lot of comedy specials. Comedy specials are really great to watch on planes because you can drift in and out of consciousness and still kind of enjoy what's going on. Now, to be fair, I did not fall asleep, at least for significant parts of these. But I watched a bunch of comedy specials on Netflix, and Netflix now lets you download their shows onto tablets. So it's super convenient when you're going on a long 6 to 7 hour plane ride.
And they have so many comedy specials now, right? I feel like every week there's more and more stuff being piled on.
Endless. Yeah. So I saw Amy Schumer's Leather special, which I thought was very enjoyable. I finally caught up with some of Hannibal Buress's material, Comedy Commissado and Hannibal Takes Edinburgh, both of which were also very enjoyable. And I watched Dave Chappelle's two new specials. These are kind of the big event, right? The Age of Spin and Deep in the Heart of Texas. Those are Dave Chappelle's new comedy specials. I had actually seen Dave Chappelle live, and so I saw him perform a version of The Age of Spin. And I guess I just want to focus a little bit on these two just for a moment, because there is some talk bubbling up about how there's a lot of homophobic and transphobic jokes in Dave Chappelle's new specials.
And also, I guess apparently he does not trust vaccines, which was weird. That was really weird. Like, there's a point where he makes a vaccine joke, and he's like, oh, he's going to tell those anti-vaccine idiots what's up. No.
I don't remember it being an anti-vaccine joke. I remember it being kind of him slightly buying into the conspiracy theory that AIDS was a disease introduced by the government.
Well, no, there's that. But no, he specifically said, like, I don't know why I should, protect my kids from a disease that doesn't exist anymore. I'm like, dude, that's that's why we do it.
Yeah, there too.
You need to follow up. So that's clearly like the mentality. And I've been searching this, Dave, and a lot of the anti-vaccine blogs are like, support Dave Chappelle supports us, and that kind of worried me too. But the transphobic and the homophobic stuff is a bigger problem.
So let me just say that overall, I found the specials to be hilarious. You know, I really enjoyed them, and I think the Age of Spin, especially, that's the better one in my opinion. It makes you think about certain issues that we're facing. Personally, on this podcast, I don't want to get into this huge rant about how transphobic some of the jokes are. You can read about that online. I will just say this: in the past, when you've seen other great comedians, like let's say Eddie Murphy and Raw or whatever, do similar jokes, those jokes age really, really poorly, right? Anything that kind of attacks or otherizes certain groups of people, that stuff ages really poorly. Like when you view that in 20 years, I don't think it's going to be funny anymore. And I think that's the case of these jokes here. Like,
I don't even think they're funny now.
Yeah, some people think they're already terrible now.
Yeah, Dave Chappelle has been kind of out of things for a decade, right? Like, he's been doing shows here and there, and we know he's been working on new material. But it does feel like Eddie Murphy trying to perform Raw in the mid-90s a little.
Yeah, and when there's a lot of homophobic material in those that special.
Yeah, but so Raw is like a clear example of the 80s and kind of where we were as a culture. But, you know, fast forward a decade and so much had changed, right? There was so much more of an understanding of what was going on. It does feel like Dave Chappelle, like as much as he's a great cultural commentator, I think he's a little out of touch with certain things at this point.
Yeah, I mean, he... You know, I was in the Slack Filmcast, the Slash Filmcast Slack group, which you can join at slackfilmcast.com. And we were talking about SNL weekend update hosts, right? We were talking about, who are – like, because I personally am not a big fan of the new ones, Colin Jost and Michael Che, right? Yep. What are your thoughts on them, Devendra?
No, not really. Michael Che has his moments, but also as a personality, he annoys me.
I think they are the worst Weekend Update hosts in my lifetime. I'm going to just put that out there, right? I was thinking through, like, who are the other Weekend Update hosts, and there's, like, Colin Quinn, I think, was pretty weak, but he had an edge to him that I don't think these new Weekend Update hosts have. But Norm MacDonald, probably my favorite Weekend Update host.
Good God, yes.
And so for my plane ride, I loaded up, some people have ripped, dozens of Norm MacDonald Weekend Update segments and put them on YouTube. And so I ripped one of them and put them on my tablet. It's just literally 90 minutes of Norm MacDonald doing Weekend Update jokes. And I was watching them and, still very funny, but again, some of those jokes have aged really badly. He essentially considers transgender individuals to be disordered, right? Like, the way he talks about it is incredibly derogatory and, like, treating it like a disorder. And it's very similar to how Dave Chappelle treats the topic in the new specials, right?
And that was, 20 years ago?
Yeah, and that was, like, decades ago. And so it feels like it's going to age poorly. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not as extreme as as Norm Macdonald, because I think he does acknowledge that, hey, like, everyone should be free to do their own thing. But he's also acknowledging his own discomfort with it.
Yeah, and it's interesting to see people work that out, because we can't – I think in my, like, liberal, idealized worldview, like, everybody would be progress and equality, and everybody should just live their own lives. But these people that we, you know, have been watching for years, I think a lot of them, too, also end up kind of being stubborn in their worldview, you know? Like, Dave Chappelle has been doing this for a while, and there are things he believes, and he has to, like, slowly get out of that. And you're seeing less of that among younger comedians. So you look to somebody like Hannibal Buress, you know, to, like, really have a better sense of what's going on in the culture and not to say things like that.
Right. Yeah. Anyway, I think I tweeted about this, and people, you know, I got dozens of tweets being like, they're just jokes, guys. Don't take them that seriously.
Is that really? Ugh. Yeah.
Firstly, I think that's a terrible defense. But regardless of whether or not they are just firstly, thanks for pointing that out. Didn't know that.
I thought I was watching a prestige drama.
Secondly, you know, regardless of whether or not they're just jokes, I stand by my point that jokes like that will age really poorly. Mm-hmm. And, you know, whether or not you agree with what he's saying, I think, you know, decades from now, we'll look back at these specials and say, wow, I can't believe people believe that stuff. So I'm going to put that out there, and then we'll check back in a decade and see if I'm right. All right. But yeah, overall, really enjoyed the specials, bummed out by some of the transphobic stuff. And I think we're going to continue to see lots of takes on that stuff in the weeks to come. So,
I mean, I'm glad that he's producing more content, and maybe he will at some point listen to criticism and see what's going on. Like, I wonder how long he's been kind of working in a vacuum and hasn't had a chance to, like, bounce his ideas off of people, too.
Yeah, we'll see. Well, anyway, that's Dave Chappelle's The Age of Spin and Deep in the Heart of Texas. Still worth checking out, despite some of the pretty rough material in there. That's what I've been watching. Devinder Hardwar, what have you been watching?
Oh, several things. I finally got to see Jackie, which is a film I've been looking forward to for a while. This is Pablo Larraín's biopic about Jacqueline Kennedy. And this is a really interesting film. I know you talked about it a little, right, Dave?
Or no, was that Jeff? I actually have not seen it yet.
Okay, yeah.
I think Jeff saw it. That's right.
Yeah. And this is just, it's such a strange film because it doesn't feel like a traditional biopic, right? There's nothing really glossy or glamorous about it. It really cuts to the heart of, you know, what this woman was going through in the moments that her husband died and everything right after and her worrying about her legacy. It is a weird film. It's very chilling in a way. It reminds me a lot of The Shining and the works of Stanley Kubrick. Like, there's so many symmetrical shots. The music is by the same woman who did Under the Skin, whose name is escaping me right now. But also, like, you know, similarly, like, disturbing. Micah Levy, I think. Yeah. Like, just really disorienting music. It's a strange film. It's a beautiful film. Like, every single shot in this movie is just fantastic and interesting in some way. But yeah, as a drama, it's just really odd. But I think that's what I enjoy about it, right? It's just a sketch of who Jacqueline Kennedy was and kind of maybe what she was going through. And this idea of trying to preserve, you know, John F. Kennedy's legacy after his death. It doesn't really go too deep, but I think as a portrait of this person in that time, it's fascinating. And
Natalie Portman does a good job. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I do think so. Like, she is, you can't take your eyes off her in this movie. And most of the time you were just staring at her. After seeing this movie, I do think she was robbed at the Oscars. It's a tremendous performance and great, you know, supporting actors all around too. Peter Sarsgaard, Greta Gerwig, John Hurt, too, here for a bit. So it was nice to see him again. It's just a really interesting film. It's a fascinating film. I don't think it's for everyone, so I can understand why Jeff wasn't fully on board. But yeah, I love this film. And if you like that idea of like an untraditional biopic, really stylish Kubrickian style drama or something, I think you'd dig this.
Cool. Well, that's Jackie. Mm-hmm. And how'd you watch it? On video on demand, I assume? Or
Yeah, I got it on iTunes. And yeah, I bought it, and I feel good about that. Yeah.
Cool. Mm-hmm. What else have you been watching?
Also checked out Planet Earth 2, which just started airing, but I checked out the 4K Blu-ray because I really want to see, you know, the fullest extent of what they did. And the big thing about this version of Planet Earth is that they shot everything in 4K, and that was broadcast on the BBC, and you can get it in 4K, I think, in some... I think on Dish in the US you could get it in 4K. But the 4K Blu-ray also has HDR, and that's like the thing, right? In terms of new TV technology, that's what I've been telling everybody. You want 4K, and you really want HDR, because you won't really see the difference between 1080p and 4K. Once you throw in HDR there and you see like what it does to the colors and the black levels and everything, and the way the highlights work in certain scenes, you'll never want to go back. So yeah, it looks incredible. I think this disc in particular is going to be a showpiece for what we can do with this technology. I'm thinking about a way to like write this up for Engadget, but basically, like, I think we can all agree that 4K Blu-ray as a standard is like was dead before it began. But to get something like this, it was all worth it. It was all worth the mess of another physical format that nobody will buy and that tons of companies have like invested, you know, millions of dollars into, and that'll probably die very soon. It was all worth it to get this in 4K Blu-ray. And I'm very glad about that. So it looks incredible. If you have the setup, I'd highly recommend it. I have a Xbox One S that I use as my 4K Blu-ray player, and it works perfectly. It's just beautiful, man.
Cool. Yeah. That's Planet Earth 2, the 4K Planet Blu-ray.
It's insane.
Do you have a favorite episode, or have you seen them all yet?
I watched the Mountains one, which is episode 2, and there's some great stuff there. Just like you could see the peaks of... the Himalayan mountains, right? And just like the white snow when the sun shines on it and it bounces off, it's just blindingly bright on my TV. It's a great "you are there" moment. And the third episode is the jungles episode, and it's just so luscious and so green, and all the animals just look incredible. So yeah, it's pure display porn, and I am totally down with that, and I think a lot of our listeners would be down with that too. So I would just highly recommend this if you have the whole new 4K HDR setup.
Cool. Planet Earth 2 on 4K Blu-ray with an Xbox One S, a potent mix. Mm-hmm. What else have you been watching, Devendra?
Let's see here. Also, Love, the second season of Love, which I really enjoy. I dug the first season. This is the Paul Rust show with Julian Jacobs as well from Community. The first season is kind of a mess. I can understand why it may have turned some people off, but
I've not seen any episodes of this show, but I heard that the characters are very unlikable.
I mean, sure, that's kind of the thing of like a new young comedy series, right? Like Girls, so many other BoJack Horseman. Come on, like trying to find sympathy in unlikable characters is kind of where we're at right now in comedy. So I don't hold it too much against the show. I think the first few episodes of the first season definitely went a little overboard, but even that season, like there's like a first date in that season that is one of the funniest like romantic comedy things I've ever seen, like be it like even classic films. Like it's just really up there. I think in season two they've found a really good flow for the show. They know more of what they want it to be and how these characters relate to each other. This is a show just full of like great experiences. You know, it's sort of a walk and talk romantic film too, or a romantic show. So if you like the Before Sunset and Sunrise stuff, there's a bit of that. But then there's just some great, weird, classic, like, you know, situations that I think are hilarious. So yeah, if you like the first season, definitely give this one a shot. And I think it is worth, if you like a good, well-crafted, well-written romantic comedies, you should check it out, even though the characters are really unlikable at the first.
All right, let's Love season 2. It's on Netflix right now.
Mm-hmm.
And you wanted to give a quick shout out to Crashing, right? The HBO show with Pete Holmes.
We talked about this, and it's fine. Like, the first couple episodes were fine. There are things I liked about it. It felt like every other show about comedians. And we had seen, I think we've been seeing a lot of those lately, like just the comedian experience. You've got Marin, you've got Louis, so much stuff. Episode 4 of Crashing, I think, gets to a point where it's really unique and really interesting because it goes more into, I think, a situation that's more unique to him and what Pete Holmes was going through. Like, the entire show is kind of about his life, too. His wife also left him.
Very autobiographical,
very much. But a lot of the early stuff did feel generic at the same time, even though it was very autobiographical. I think from episode 4 and on, it gets to be a lot more personal and a lot more interesting and specific to the show, right? There's a show about him just, what they call it? There's a thing where you just have to go hand out the comedy flyers.
Yeah.
And an entire show just about him doing that.
Barking is what it's called.
Yeah, barking. Yeah. Doing that, if you live in New York, you've seen those people around trying to get you to random shows. That whole experience and that whole episode I thought was really unique. And then, you know, it gets more specific after that, too. So I think the show has grown a lot in just a few episodes. So definitely stick with it if you gave up early on.
All right. Well, that's Crashing. And I've been enjoying that show on HBO as well. All right. That's all we've been watching this week. Let's move on into film news. A couple of items to mention this week. Firstly, True Detective. This is a show that we really love season one of. Did you ever get to the end of season two, Devendra?
Yeah, I finished it. Did you?
What'd you think? I didn't get to the – I watched like the first 3 to 4 episodes and just petered
there,
out.
There are things I really liked about season two. The cast specifically, like Colin Farrell was there and doing his eye smoldering thing. But yeah, that show shit the bed so hard in the like last few episodes. It was almost hilarious. And the weird thing is now, like, I can't – it's like it just evaporated from my memory. Like, the entire experience of watching season two was so ephemeral and so, like, illusory that I can barely recall anything except, you know, some great actors I enjoy. So, yeah, that was season two.
On Metacritic, season one received an 87. Season two received a 61. So people really did not like season two. Season one had this iconic depiction of Russ Cole, right? Mm-hmm. By Matthew McConaughey, who was incredible.
Great direction
with Corey Fukunaga. You know, a lot of great stuff to recommend season one. Season two, they had some really talented directors as well, but people really did not enjoy that. And it's been a couple of years since season two happened, so people just thought... season three probably is never going to happen, especially because one of the programmers at HBO basically admitted that season two was bad.
He admitted to that because they rushed him.
Yeah, like,
they did really push Nick Pizzolatto to get it out in a year, pretty much.
But we are now hearing from Entertainment Weekly that Nick Pizzolatto has written 2 episodes of an upcoming season 3 that has not been greenlit yet, but that David Milch is on board.
What a whiplash of news, by the way. Like, as soon as you mention, like, True Detective season 3, I feel like eyes start to roll. And then you say David Milch, and those eyes just, like, roll out of their heads and jaws drop. And it's like, what? Really? Okay.
Does this excite you, Devendra? Are you psyched?
I am very psyched by this, for sure. I mean, like, I saw there were good elements in True Detective Season 2. I think Nick Pizzolatto just needed help. I think he was writing all the episodes on his own.
Yeah. I'm not sure. You know, I'm curious how the people with really strong personalities work together. Like Nick Pizzolatto has a really strong personality. Seems like David Milch is a really strong personality. So... Are they going to have a good collaboration? I don't know. It's all very preliminary right now.
I feel like you could – that's True Detective Season 3, the making of True Detective – like Nick Pizzolatto and David Milch just trying to, like, get along. Because on the one hand, you have an actual genius. You know, you have the creator of NYPD Blue and Deadwood, 2 of the best TV shows ever made. And you have a guy who – I think a lot of people would think he's a genius, at least, like, depending on how we've seen him portray himself. And he can write good dialogue when he has enough time. Sure. Like, Nick Pizzolatto has a decent amount of talent. It is sort of like seeing the Jedi Master come in and train the young, like, insolent Padawan or something. So I think this will be fascinating to watch. I'm very excited about this.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. All right, next bit of film news is Variety reported that movie studios are exploring the idea of a $30 home movie rental roughly 3 to 4 weeks after a movie's out in theaters. Now, this has been experimented with before, talked about before. I think the price used to be $50. Like, you know, you could see a movie that was still in theaters and pay $50. Devinder Hardware, would you pay $30 to see a movie in your house after it's been out in theaters for a month?
It depends. Are we talking about rentals here?
It's basically a rental.
It does sound like that, yeah. I think I would, depending on certain factors, right? If there's enough of a crowd. Like, here in New York, our movie tickets are up to around $18.50 if you want, like, if you want one of the pricier screens, and even some, I think, normal theaters are up to that now. But basically, I'm paying between $16 and $18 per theater to, you know, see something. That adds up. If my family's in town, you know, and we don't kind of want to schlep out, and there's the cost of actually getting to theater as well and everything, I may want to do this, sure. Like, I do this all the time for iTunes as well. Like, I end up buying a lot of iTunes purchases just because it's a little more. I would have paid the same amount of money. I would have paid $15 for a movie ticket. If it's something I really want to see, I'd rather just buy it and have it there in my library and I can go back to it. Like Jackie, like that was a blind buy for me, and I'm very glad I did that because there's commentary. There's all sorts of stuff I could go back to. So yeah, I could totally see doing this, and I could see families doing this too, because going to see the movies is expensive.
Yeah. So I think what's crazy about this plan is the windows are just getting shorter and shorter, you know. Right now you can see a movie in theaters, and then 3 months later you can get it on iTunes, and now it's just introducing this other window where 1 month later you can watch it for $30. If you're willing to wait 3 months, if you're willing to not see it in theaters, right, why wouldn't you just wait a couple of extra months and just buy it? You know what I'm saying? Like, that part doesn't make sense to me. Is if you're not seeing, you know, Beauty and the Beast or Fist Fight or whatever, Lego Batman in theaters, why would you wait? It just doesn't feel like there's enough of a market there. I mean, maybe
this being huge, man.
Maybe for like people who have like families, you know, and you want to see Lego Batman and it's not out on video on demand yet, I could see, you know, you forking over.
But more likely, your kids will want to see Lego Batman. And the whole process of taking a kid, you know, and maybe two kids, maybe more, to a movie, dealing with them, getting them snacks, dealing with, like, potential bathroom breaks during the thing. Like, that's not a great experience for any parent.
Yeah. But
have you ever seen those parents, David?
I totally get that. But then why not wait a couple of extra months and just buy it?
I mean, I get that, but then you have kids who are like, you know, I really want to see this
thing. I want to see it now, but it doesn't have to be right now. It could be in a few weeks.
Exactly. Like, and that's the thing. Like, I think this could be a good middle ground. You know, we'll see. But honestly, if it's something that gets, like, the more gets, you know, certain families out or parents who can't really control their kids to see something, like, at home, I could see this potentially being a good idea, and maybe it'll push the theaters to work even harder at like creating an experience that would actually make you want to come in.
I have been reading this newsletter called The Ankler, which is written by Richard Rushfield, and he writes this newsletter. You can, if you Google The Ankler newsletter or whatever, you can find it. And every day he sends you like his summary of the day's industry news. I really enjoy it. It helps keep me sane. He responded to this with some questions in the Ankler newsletter. Quote, "Disney is the one company that seems to get something about the magic of movie going, and it's working out pretty well for them. Shouldn't their non-interest in this program tell the others something? Likewise, does the fact that Warner's is leading this charge give anyone comfort? If a movie is already dead in theaters after a month, why would people want to pay $30 to watch it on TV? So on and so forth. And I'll skip to the end. What if you destroyed the theatrical window and nobody came?" End quote. So a lot of questions. And yeah, as he mentions, Disney is not involved. Disney, by the way, had four of the top grossing films of 2016. They're one of the only people that are doing well right now in the movie industry. And so the fact that they are not interested at all, worth considering why they might not be interested. And yeah, as he pointed out, Warner Brothers is leading the charge on this. And while they have had some hits, they are also the studio that gave us Batman v Superman and Suicide Squad. So, which did okay box office-wise, but were not great films in my opinion. Mm-hmm. So
We're at a really interesting time right now, right? Like, I just came out of South By, and I heard people talking about movies like Prevenge, right? And as of this week, you can watch Prevenge at home on Shudder or iTunes. And that's like an indie thing. So we've definitely seen like the theatrical run for some indies is like come down to zero,
yeah,
depending on where they land.
Yeah. So I don't feel at home in this world anymore. The Sundance Grand Jury Prize winner, you can watch it on Netflix. You know?
And the Netflix thing is even weirder, right? Because you're already subscribing to that. You're not paying extra to download it or to rent it or something. It's just there. And then it's there kind of unceremoniously too. Like we talked about this.
Yeah.
I do think that window for indies, even smaller indies, I think end up on streaming much faster than 3 months. Like I've seen things hit streaming much faster. I wouldn't be surprised if something happened similarly to bigger budget films.
We'll see. I don't know that. I don't think I would do it, Devendra. Mm-hmm. I don't think I would pay $30 to see a movie that I could have in like...
You don't have a family yet, Dave.
Well, yeah, I don't have a family. But even if I did, I feel like I would just wait an extra like 6 weeks and just buy it so I could watch it whenever I want.
I could see that. But
it just doesn't make much sense to me.
Sometimes, like Dave, you're a movie fan. You're stuck at home with your kid and you can't like get a babysitter to go see the movie you really want to see. I could see it working in certain instances. I don't think it's going to be a huge thing that's going to make a lot of money for these studios. So... yeah, I guess we'll see where it all goes.
We'll see. I think there's a lot of data as to whether this will even happen at all. And without Disney, what good is it? So we'll see. Anyway, that's some film news for you. You can find a bunch of other film news over at slashfilm.com, cranking up their output of original content recently. We have like dozens of pieces each week that are not just reblogs of film news now, just original content. We got a great new team, many of whom we look forward to welcoming onto the Slash Filmcast in the days to come. So check out all that stuff out at slashfilm.com. Let's get to our review. Before we do that, we got to thank all the people that donated to the Slash Filmcast in the past 3 weeks. We haven't thanked people for 3 weeks, and so we have a huge backlog here. I'm going to start thanking them now. Adam Shipley, Leilani Akiyama from Cockington, United Kingdom, if that's a real place, Teresa Alpert, Banzai Media LLC, Ahmed Adudi, Mark W. from Denmark, Robert Cassidy from Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, Harry Seaward Phoenix, DJ Fohip from Toronto, Cash Cow from Auckland, New Zealand, Bruce France, Ivana Tinkle, a classic one there, Kyle Smith from the Literate Cinephiles podcast, Brian P. Hayes from Bel Air, Kansas, Ron Small from Walnut Creek, California, Christina Tobin, Lisa Cook from Columbus, Ohio. Thank you so much for your donations. Thanks also to new subscribers at the rate of $2 per month, Kevin Hansen, Kyle Thayer, Huiyan Nguyen, Grace Meng, Ryan Hecht, Ben Gon, and Sam Clark. If you want to support the Slash Filmcast and defray the costs of doing the show, go to slashfilm.com, click on the Slash Filmcast tab, and use the PayPal links on the side of the page. We really appreciate it. Thanks to all the people that have donated over the past few weeks, and thanks to those who use funny names when they donate. We really appreciate it. It's a gas. All right, let's get to our review of Life.
Hey, guys, it's a girl.
Congratulations. Do you have any idea who the father is?
Shut up.
Well, story time.
All right, let's go. 3, 2, 1.
This is Dr. David Jordan. Our mission is to intercept a research pod from Mars.
16 steps to fix a shower. I'm an astronaut, not a gym teacher.
This is the first capsule ever to come back from the planet.
We have visual confirmation.
I see it.
This could be a major scientific breakthrough.
Come on.
Woo! Cue Instagram!
We're looking at the first proof of life beyond Earth. Lowering oxygen, more carbon dioxide.
That's beautiful.
You're finally a daddy.
It's going to be a big custody battle over this one.
Are you going to bring the Martian back to Earth?
No, we're going to keep it up here. We're going to study where it's safe.
Look how fast it's growing.
That was from the trailer of Life, the newest film by director Daniel Espinosa. Going to read the plot summary from IMDb. A team of scientists aboard the International Space Station discover a rapidly evolving life form that caused extinction on Mars and now threatens the crew and all life on Earth. As I mentioned earlier in the podcast, this stars Ryan Reynolds, Rebecca Ferguson, Jake Gyllenhaal. Hiroyuki Sanada. When will people learn to stop sending Hiroyuki Sanada into space?
Don't send it to space, guys.
Do not send it to space. It goes horribly. Every time it goes horribly.
That is hilarious, by the way. Yeah.
Anyway. All right. So, Life. This movie did okay at the box office. Not super great. But it has an amazing cast. It's competently directed. And it's inspired by sci-fi classics like The Thing, Gravity, and Alien.
Alien, yeah.
Now, my question for you, Devin, your Hardwire, do you think Life adds anything new to the sci-fi horror genre?
Not really. Like, it's... Yeah. This is a movie that I would describe as fine. It's perfectly fine. Like, it's... There's some decent sequences in here, and there's one scenario that that involves something happening in a spacesuit that I thought was kind of terrifying to see, and I don't think I've seen that in a movie before. But beyond that, like, this is a movie that exists mainly because it's building or it's kind of trying to ape what Alien did mixed with what Gravity did. And I don't think it quite succeeds, right? It's a fine thriller. There's some scary moments and, like, you know, people die and you may or may not feel bad for them. But I just, like, watching this thing, I couldn't help but feel like how pointless it all was, right? Like, huh. We were just watching these things happen. I didn't care about, like, there's no greater theme to this movie, right? There's nothing bigger going on. It's just, like, thing shows up and people act very stupidly for scientists.
Least professional NASA scientist ever, in my opinion.
And for some reason, the most insanely funded NASA ever, too. Like, we're going to pick this movie apart a little. So I think, yeah, upon first watching, it's fine. Like, there are things I liked about it. I like Jake Gyllenhaal. I don't think Rebecca Ferguson had much to do at all. I don't even know why she's in this movie. Like, I thought we were seeing a Solaris-type thing, too. Like, was she just his dead wife that wasn't really there the whole time? Because she did absolutely nothing throughout the entire movie. So there's all, you know, there are certainly big disappointments. But it was fine the first time. But the more I think about this movie, the dumber it is and the angrier I get. So... Yeah, I'm ready to dive in deeper into it. But yeah, it's fine, mostly.
Yeah, I think I would give this movie like a 7 out of 10. You know, I don't think it's bad. It's not great. And I think the two biggest things, in my opinion, preventing it from being great are, number one, the characters do behave stupidly, in my opinion. And number two, the characters are very poorly sketched out. You know, mm-hmm. like you, the reason Alien succeeds is because Ripley is just like an unforgettable character, right? And she's portrayed
and she's surrounded by also unforgettable leads or supporting characters too. Like, I think they're as great as Ripley is, there are so many things you learn about those other characters that you feel for them, and you know, okay, this guy's the asshole. This one's kind of the cool one you can trust. This one's the badass, things like that. This one's the scientist that you maybe shouldn't trust. Yeah, things like that. Like, you get a sense of who those people are. And I have no idea who the hell anybody is really in Life.
Yeah, I agree. It's a big problem. That's the big problem with this movie is that the characters aren't well defined enough. And, you know, in the past we've talked about how good the characterization is in movies like Gravity. And again, a movie like Life really makes you appreciate a movie like Gravity more, right? In the case of Gravity, less is more, right? The characters in Gravity, there are very few of them. And their motivations and sort of emotional states are fairly simple. And because of that, I think it's much more impactful than this movie, where there's six characters and you don't really get to know any of them. And it becomes a bigger problem later on in the movie when aspects of the plot really depend on you having an understanding of what these characters are trying to do.
Sure.
Which I don't think I ever got. Yeah.
The thing about Gravity, too, is like there's a fundamental story there about struggle and survival. And like you can relate to that. That's something you can latch on to.
Well, that's something I disagree with you on this movie. Uh-huh. I think there is the theme that I would say is that life
will find a way.
Well, that life. One of the characters articulates it straight up that life depends on death, right?
Right.
Like, that in order for life to go on, something needs to be destroyed. And you know, that's kind of true, you know, that like the
sure.
laws of thermodynamics dictate, you know, when we eat food, right? Like we destroy things, right? Like we take something that's alive and convert it into something that's dead.
Yeah. So they restated the laws of the jungle, basically. I mean, I get that. That is certainly a thing a character said. It's certainly an idea that the movie tries to accomplish. I don't think it quite gets there, I guess. Like, okay,
right, you did not feel the thematic weight of this
right.
movie hit you. Right?
And I think they could have tried a little more, but if I had cared more about the characters, if the movie itself weren't so dependent on imagery, and like there's so many things that feel like they're just lifted directly from Alien. That it's insane. This movie feels like a reboot without actually being called a reboot. Like, that's how close it is to me.
Well, I think the movie really falls down. I think the missing link of this movie is the character of Hugh Derry, played by Arian Bakari. That character felt like, oh my god, if they had fleshed that character out a little bit more, or done a little bit more of that character, I felt like the movie would have come together in a much bigger way, because a lot of the movie really hinges around his struggle, in my opinion.
And, yeah,
and
yeah, yeah.
But you don't – it's not reflected in the script, unfortunately. So
mm-hmm.
anyway, I felt like stylistically there was a lot of this movie that was inspired by Gravity, like the score, the opening shot. You know, there's a lot of – this movie felt a lot more Gravity to me than Alien, but certainly from a plot or theme mm-hmm. perspective, it's much more Alien.
It's definitely like a weird, yeah, Alien hybrid of the yeah. two, right? Just having – I did just rewatch Alien, and that movie is just still fresh in my mind, and – yeah, there's so many things. There's a, oh, surprise reveal. The monster's actually there on the person. Things like that. Like, yeah. we got to get him out of the airlock. It's the only thing you could do.
Yeah.
Yeah, things like that. But yeah, it's very much Gravity because it is closer to Earth, and it's all about orbiting around Earth and everything.
Right, right. All right, well, let's get to spoilers, Devendra, and start picking apart the plot of this movie right now.
Now you're looking for the secret.
Trying to see this coming.
No.
But you won't find it because, of course,
you're not going to see this coming.
You're not really looking.
I have been puzzling over how it works.
You don't really want to work it out.
Who's in the box?
I have been dying to tell you.
I want to tell you my secret.
You want to be fooled.
I enjoy watching movies where people are incredibly professional, like competence mm-hmm. porn. You know, I
yeah,
enjoy
yeah, yeah.
watching movies where, oh, hey, that person is doing that job really, really well.
Yes.
You know,
like movies about fixers and things like that. People
yeah.
who just like know the lay of the land and everything.
Yeah, 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 yeah. And this movie, the scientists or astronauts are not aspirational. You know, they behave from a place of emotion. And this is evident when they are playing around with this organism. And on more than one occasion, a character in the movie said, "Fuck this, I'm going in." Right, and like
into the
quarantine area that he's
yeah.
not supposed to go into. And
do you not know how that works?
Right. The whole purpose of having rules is so that you are protecting something that's beyond yourself and beyond your own passions. And of course, we've seen in movies like people break these rules all the time, and sometimes it leads to great drama. But I guess in this movie, it didn't work for me, I think, partly because we hadn't really established the characters at all before they start
yeah.
breaking the rules. You know,
yeah.
it's one thing if, hey, this person is super buttoned up by the book and they never break the rules, and then, oh, but suddenly extreme things happen and they break the rules later. Like that, there's some drama in that. In this movie, 15 minutes in, they're behaving like jackasses.
Yeah.
You know?
So I was listening to your Kong review, Dave, a movie that I really enjoyed for how also dumb and fun it was, though. And that movie does the like Michael Bay early character sketch.
Yeah.
It's like you just pan to every character quickly. It's like, oh, this guy's the badass. This
right.
guy's the smart one. This movie didn't even have that.
It does not,
you know?
Even. Well, what it does have, Devendra, in my opinion, is a spectacular one-shot opening sequence.
That is pretty good. Yeah,
it felt very inspired by Gravity, which has like mm-hmm. an 18-minute one-shot or 12-minute whatever one-shot sequence. And you know, that long take, it serves a purpose. I mean, it wasn't. It looked like it was not all done in one take. It looked like it did some digital stitching, of course.
Oh,
but,
for sure.
But
it's just the lay of the land. It shows
yeah, it,
what,
not, it like, shows you the layout of the ship, which is awesome. Mm-hmm. But the reason that Alfonso Cuarón made Gravity in the way he did is because when you watch videos of people in space, it's like a documentary camera that's floating there, and you're watching a continuous shot for many, many minutes. Mm-hmm. And he wanted it to feel like other videos you've seen of those situations. And so I think it really is immersive. I was very impressed with the opening shot. I thought to myself, man, if the rest of the movie is as inventive as this, we're going to be great.
I thought we were starting off on good territory.
Yeah, we had a great opening shot and kind of established layout. There was a big kind of thing that they needed to accomplish, and they did it. It was really well done, I thought. Mm-hmm. And then things start to go downhill almost immediately because they start behaving stupidly. Ryan Reynolds.
Even that opening scene, by the way, like as impressive that was, what they were trying. Did you think about what they were trying to do?
They were trying to catch a errant. Satellite or whatever with
something that was on its way from Mars.
Samples, yeah.
They were trying to catch it.
I'm not even gonna think about whether it's scientifically possible.
I'm just trying to think about why would you do that? And they even said like, NASA spent $200 billion on the space station, and all these world governments did too. And it's like, you're just gonna chance that the space station or something attached to the space station can catch it. Why is Ryan Reynolds outside operating a space arm?
Yeah, like why can't you do that from inside?
I mean, communicate to Earth. You can have a remote control robot arm and control it from inside the space station. Like,
Devendra, that's
the sort of thing.
One thing that was good at setting up was how these people imperil themselves for no really good reason. So you have these people who are out in the depths of space, and they catch this thing, and then they bring the sample inside the ship, and Hugh starts testing it, but then he makes a dumb mistake and leaves some valve open or whatever.
By the way, for that being such a big mistake, it was not conveyed at all anyway, like cinematically.
Right. It's just, this thing happened to occur, and now we're going to give
you idiot. Look what you did. You've doomed us all.
And so
off camera,
they didn't do a good job of setting up the stakes, so that was bad. And then, Devendra, this creature that we have no idea how powerful it is, what it's going to do, how smart it is, like whether or not it's violent. Let's electroshock it to life.
Let's
antagonize it until it wakes up again, because nothing could go wrong with that plan.
Uh-huh.
They antagonize it, and then Ryan Reynolds rushes in, and then he gets killed in brutal fashion by this creature.
That was a good surprising kill, because I feel like Ryan Reynolds, he's a big enough name that you wouldn't expect him to die.
Right.
And
I think, like, where this movie really falls down, like I said, the Hugh character, he kind of caused all this, right? Mm-hmm. Later, there's a moment where the creature is apparently feasting off him, right? And he doesn't say anything about it.
Yeah.
Now, a part of that could be because he doesn't know that it's feasting off him, right? Because he's paralyzed from the waist down, and he doesn't have any feeling in his legs. But in the Slack film cast, they were talking about how maybe he does know, right? Because he's like, maybe the creature is driving him insane, right? Mm-hmm. That he sees the possibility, like he's intoxicated by the idea of this creature.
Another thing that could have been conveyed cinematically.
That's what I'm saying, is they didn't do that. You don't understand what Hugh's state of mind is at that point in the movie.
Yeah, like think about Sunshine, right? Like that movie is entirely about this idea of how, being so close to the sun, this thing that we've worshipped for so long, has slowly driven people insane. And you see that portrayed.
You see it unfold slowly during the course of the movie, and it reaches a fever pitch. But then this character of Hugh, he has all this stuff. Oh, maybe this creature could cure my paralysis. Maybe it could reverse the unreversible. Like, who knows? Irreversible. Who knows what it could do? And then that's the end of it. Like, we don't ever hear any more of what he thinks about it until he's dead.
Well, thing destroys his arm, right? And they get him out. So he's passed out. He wakes up at some point. That's not like a big enough moment to be like, oh my God, he's alive. And he's not like, he's not hurt. He's not like,
well, his arm's jacked up.
Arm's jacked up, but he's not conveying it. He's just like walking around, like with no sense of like pain.
Floating around. Yeah.
Floating around. Yeah. But still, there's no sense of like, oh, this is a thing that happened.
Right.
And it has
how did it affect his opinion on the creature? You know,
mm-hmm.
What does he think now? We never got to have that moment. So that is the hugest bummer to me, is that like, that character was so poorly fleshed out. And then, you know, so then everyone dies except for Jake Gyllenhaal and Rebecca Ferguson.
Well, everyone dies, and also NASA didn't tell everybody, like, the ultimate, the big plan.
Oh, yeah. They didn't tell them the big plan that they might all die, apparently, which, again, you'd think that they would let them know that, because that's a pretty crucial part of their mission. Like, seems like important enough that you'd want people who understood that, you know?
For sure, for sure. Like, so they understand the quarantine rule. Like, they understand why this is a very big deal. Because I do like the idea of, like, okay, we are playing around with this thing up here, and we cannot let it get to Earth. You know, like that idea, if they had conveyed that better and if everybody understood the stakes, I think would have been a lot stronger.
Yeah.
But also, isn't Rebecca Ferguson's character, like, is she married to Jake Gyllenhaal's character, I think, right? They have some sort of relationship.
I don't think so. I don't think that's
there the case. There was some reference to somebody having family, like, I have family aboard. Or are they just
No. He was just saying like he has family, like board, family. Like they're like brothers and sisters kind of thing.
There's like a weird sense I got of a relationship between them, but maybe it was cut or something.
No, I don't. Yeah. I mean, yeah, I agree with you that there was supposed to be some kind of potential attraction there, but it never made it into the final movie. Here's what I think got cut. At the end, they're talking about the plan A and the plan B, which I thought was actually like a pretty cool scene, talking about how they would get rid of the creature. And then he says, no, I have to be plan A. I'm the pilot, which they never introduced him as a pilot. They introduced him as the crew's medical officer.
He's the med guy. Yeah.
Even though he doesn't really do that much.
Well, you can still be a pilot, right? You still can be, you know,
it seems like a crucial plot point that they did not introduce earlier on in the film. It felt like it got left on the cutting room floor.
But he was the guy that had like the Air Force pins or, you know.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Label or something, like, so we knew he had that background, and we knew that she was from a more like administrative, I think, background or scientific background. So that bit I bought, but you're missing the point, Dave. Like, so he announces the A and B plans after reading a children's book because he forgot there are escape shuttles. That's the bigger problem here.
As someone in the Slack Filmcast pointed out, hey, there's one way we know to kill this thing. Let's not do that thing, which is they could just like evacuate the entire ship, right, and kill themselves, and just like turn off all life support and just like, you know, airlock the whole ship, and sure, it might the creature might survive for 40 minutes and it might survive entry into the atmosphere, but you have a pretty good shot at killing it, but for some reason they don't want to do that.
Well, I think I can understand the idea that we don't just want to kill ourselves and not have like any clue of what happened, right?
Right,
like if we're gonna sacrifice ourselves, let's at least make sure we're pushing this thing out of orbit. That also was not conveyed very strongly, but yeah, I guess by the point where we're talking about plan A and plan B, then yeah, that's sort of there.
Yeah, and then the ending of this movie is kind of interesting, I thought. Like, it's arguably edited in a very confusing way, so you don't really know what's going on. But
purposefully edited,
Then at the end, you find out, oh my gosh, the wrong pod made it. You know what's funny? I was in a theater with a dozen people. I watched this movie in Hawaii. And at the end of the movie, this woman, who is probably in her 50s, sitting in front of me, the pod lands on Earth. This woman, she's in the theater by herself. She turns around and just says to me out loud, "It's the wrong pod." Just, she had this insight. She had no one to share it with.
Yeah,
except me.
I love that moment in theaters. Yeah.
So that was a fun moment. These, I assume Chinese people. They might be some other Asian ethnicity. They're so helpful, Devendra. They're just like, we're gonna get this guy out of this horrible situation he's in.
Dave, didn't you feel like you were watching the end of Planet of the Apes? Right. Like, this is a historic moment in cinema. Like, oh my god, nobody expected that.
Yeah, that this creature, like, who knows what's going to happen to this creature once it gets onto planet Earth? It's going to kill everyone, right?
Like, on the one hand, I kind of
I like that ending. I thought it was a cool ending. You know?
I thought it was cool.
It was a classic switcheroo.
Classic switcheroo. Cool in the way, like, I think a teenager would think a cool, like, bad ending would be.
Oh, so you did not like the ending.
I've just been thinking about it. Like, you didn't earn that ending, movie. Like, I feel like you watch something like Planet of the Apes, you watch another movie where things go batshit at the very end, they tend to earn it.
I'm curious what earning it means in this case, right? Like, because really what it feels like is, hey, you're not going to get a happy ending. right? We've put you, you know, I think to the extent that this movie is unpleasant, hey, we've showed you these people try their best to kill this creature and then get murdered horribly by it. And then, oh, some hope for you? Here's some hope for you. And then, nope, the hope is gone. Humanity is doomed.
Yeah.
Right?
Like, and what is the point?
It's a big F you to the audience, right? And I appreciate the audacity of it.
I feel like the movie already said F you to me several times while I was watching it. So that's maybe why the ending rubbed me a little wrong, too. It was like, oh, look how badass we are. Like, we're going to do this really dark ending. And that made me think, you know what? Fuck you, movie. Mm. Like, you didn't earn that. Like, you didn't really deserve what you're trying to do here. It's a nice way to, like, shock us at the end. And you tricked us with some editing. But I don't think thematically it means much. I don't understand, like, the point of it other than, yeah, life will, you know, life destroys other life to survive. And that's just the way it is. The end. That's it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I actually could see, like, there being some sort of sequel to this. Like, if this movie were successful enough, I don't think it will be. But, yeah, the monster, like, just, like, terrorizing Earth in different ways. So, like, that could be kind of fun. But I also don't – that's not the point of, like, what I just watched.
I'm a little surprised you're so negative on it, because I think the idea of these creatures that are dormant on Mars until the like, circumstances are right was kind of cool, you know?
It's cool. That's a cool idea.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would have liked more of that.
But yeah,
I would have liked.
I agree. The themes were not really well brought to life, and the characters were not really well brought to life, and that's really where why the movie is not great. It has enough decent things that I would say, hey, if this comes on TV or if it's on HBO Go or whatever, it's worth checking out. But it's fine. It's not bad.
Fine.
It's not great. It's decent.
I think I'm more annoyed that it's so close to being something that could be genuinely good.
Yeah.
You know, if they had set up the characters better, if we had more of a sense of, like, the discovery of what they had found. Or
if, like, there weren't so many plot contrivances, you know?
Sure.
At one point, the character played by Hiroyuki Sanada, his microphone breaks, right? Mm-hmm. For no reason other than that the plot can't have him communicating with the other people so that he can do something stupid, right? And that that happens a few times. Is like technology just breaks down randomly. And I guess that's true to life, but it just felt very convenient and not – it just felt like the movie kept doing things to create situations where people could behave stupidly.
No, definitely.
And that's very unfortunate. Right.
Certainly, and I think that's partially why the ending didn't quite work for me either. Like, it just felt, after so much contrivance, like, here's the final contrivance. Here's the cherry on top. You are fucked, Earth, and that's that.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I wish I could appreciate it more. Like, it was kind of, I think it's cool to see a risky ending like that, but I just wish it has to mean something.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It's like... I talked about this. I could relate something like this to, like, the church scene in Kingsman, which I keep talking about, where a lot of crazy stuff happens and it doesn't quite mean much. Or even maybe some of the action in John Wick 2, like, things happening without actual motivation or actual character meaning or, you know, greater thematic meaning is just kind of, it's just there. It's not really that interesting, I think.
Yeah. Well, those are our thoughts on Life. New film by Daniel Espinosa is out in theaters right now. I think Espinosa is a talented genre director. Like,
sure.
I actually liked Safe House with Denzel Washington and Ryan Reynolds.
There is the rumor that he could end up doing that Akira movie if that ever happens.
Yeah.
And that
so
could be
I'm a fan of his. His movies, I think, are good, but not great. Like, I saw Easy Money with Joel Kinnaman. I like that movie. You know, I think they're good. You know, but I haven't seen a movie from him that I thought, oh my gosh, you must go see this. You know,
right?
It's movies that I enjoy. I like leaving them on in the background sometimes. I enjoy them. But
he did Child 44, which is a movie that I don't. That's a movie that exists and has some big stars in it, and nobody talks about it.
Yeah.
It's weird.
Anyway. Well, those are our thoughts on Life. Let us know what you thought of the film at slashfilmcast@gmail.com. Find more episodes of this podcast at slashfilmcast.com. Stay tuned to hear what we'll be reviewing next week. Also, music for our podcast comes courtesy of adamwarrock.com. Our spoiler theme is from filmmaker Kyle Hillinger. Our Slash Film Court theme is from simonmharris.com. In the meantime, Devendra Hardware, where can we find more of your work on the internet this week?
Oh, I'm at Devendra on Twitter, and you can find me writing about tech and gadget.com.
I'm at davechen.net, and recently relaunched the Tobolowsky Files. So if you want to find that, go to tobolowskyfiles.com. Next week, we'll be reviewing Ghost in the Shell, new Scarlett Johansson remake of the Japanese classic. Looking forward to diving into that one. It should be a pretty interesting conversation.
I would recommend everybody also rewatch the original, because you can see it in many places, because it's going to be relevant to next week's discussion. So that's your homework.
Totally. All right. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you next week on the Slash Filmcast, the official podcast of SlashFilm.com. All right, welcome to the Slash Filmcast After Dark. We talk about a variety of random topics that are of no significance to anyone. And it's just stuff that's on our mind, and we don't expect anyone to listen to it. So here we are. Devendra, is there anything on your mind that you want to talk about? I have a couple things.
Yeah, go for it. I'll think about stuff.
I went to Hawaii recently. It was a fantastic trip.
Nice.
And did the whole thing, you know, went parasailing, went snorkeling, all that stuff. And firstly, I want to thank all the people that follow me on Twitter that recommended things to do. There were a bunch of locals who gave some really great recommendations, many of whom were listeners. So thank you so much for doing that. One of the people recommended an open-door helicopter ride. Have you ever been on one of these things, Devendra?
I've never been on a helicopter.
Neither have I.
An open-door helicopter sounds terrifying.
It is terrifying. There's like nothing between you and a, you know, like a 40-story drop.
I'm imagining like with the final scene in Crank.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
It's like reenacting that. That sounds awful. But okay, how was that?
It was awesome. I would recommend everyone at least do it once. I bought a GoPro to document some of our adventures, and I'll probably be writing up a review for that at davechen.net, but a GoPro Hero 5 session. But anyway, the helicopter ride is a steep $250 a person.
Mm-hmm.
However, we were able to get a discount of $200 off that price if we agreed to go to a timeshare presentation.
Oh, boy.
Hours.
Yeah.
Have you been to a timeshare presentation?
I have not. I have been on vacations where my parents agreed to do stuff like that. I can understand the appeal of just like, spending a couple hours there to save some money for sure.
Yeah, I mean, the downside is you're basically doing work in order to on your vacation, right? Mm-hmm. But I have never been to a timeshare presentation, and Devendra, I wanted to be taken in. Like I was never going to sign on the dotted line. Uh-huh. But I wanted to at least
you wanted
understand.
To believe.
I wanted to understand. You know, I like seeing a good sales pitch, right? I wanted to.
You're
understand.
The kind of guy that would go to a Scientology like session, just be okay. Show me what you got.
Yeah,
guy.
Yeah, I do the personality test just to see like how it goes. Yeah. So I went to the timeshare presentation, and I was stunned, Devendra, because even on its face, like. With the most cursory of thought, it is a terrible idea. They spend, you know, an hour and 45 minutes showing you the timeshare location, talking about, oh, hey, wouldn't you love to have a home away from home, blah, 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 and like telling you all about like how amazing the deal is and all the flexibility that you have and stuff. And they save until the last 15 minutes, you know, the sheet with the terms on it, right? So it's basically like this, for $16,000, if we bought $16,000 of a timeshare, we could go on vacation once every 2 years.
okay.
And that's it. That's it. And then on top of that, we need to pay, I think, something like, I want to say it's like $50 to $100 a month in maintenance fees. And those maintenance fees are where they get you, because you need to pay those
$16,000.
No, because
far more than a hotel.
That's right, because the maintenance fees you need to pay forever. So even after you've paid the even if I forked over a check for $16,000, I'd need to pay the maintenance fees forever.
Mm-hmm.
And also, by the way, the maintenance fees can go up. Like if a hurricane hit one of the, you know, the locations, my maintenance fee might like quadruple, and I'd be on the hook for it. Mm-hmm. And those maintenance fees are where they get you. And so it's like, this is a horrible deal. You know, like I don't understand why anyone would accept this.
Did you call them out on the terrible deal?
No. But like we said no. But it's just baffling to me because also, by the way, if this is for some reason, anything I said appealed to you as you're listening to this, you can apparently get timeshares. Well, what's funny is while we were walking to do the tour of the timeshare, there's literally a kiosk outside that. The advertisement is, hey, do you need help getting out of your timeshare? Talk to me. And
are you trapped in a prison of hell?
Yeah, no, that's exactly what it's like.
And actually, you enter hell?
And actually, by the way, so you go to, they have a website called timesharemen.com. Timesharemen, M-E-N.com. Mm-hmm. And this website is so sketchy. It is like, it feels like a scam website, which, by the way, like in order to extract you from another scam, which is the timeshare itself, right? So it's like Inception. It's like two levels deep scams of like there is a timeshare, which is itself a bad deal. And then the people who are supposed to get you out of the timeshare, also a bad deal.
I just visited that website and immediately audio started playing.
That's how you know
it's legit.
That's how you know it's quality. So,
Did they threaten you at all? Like, how did that conversation go? Were they like, man, I sure hope your helicopter ride's all right.
No. They actually were very kind about it. But I think they knew that they were not going to sell us a timeshare. So they were trying to like fill the time by like talking with us about other things, like, you know, asking us personal questions and stuff.
That's cool.
Because they didn't want us to like leave. You know, like they don't want you to get up and just walk out before the timeshare presentation. They're supposed to keep you there for 2 hours. So anyway, the thing I was going to say is if for some reason this timeshare thing appealed to you, which, you know, I hope it didn't. But if it did, it is way easier to get a timeshare on the secondary market, meaning like you can get a timeshare off of someone who already owns one. Mm-hmm. Because often those timeshares will be sold at up to a 99% discount. And possibly free. Like, there's people who will want to just give you the timeshare so they don't have to deal with the fees anymore. So
that sounds all great.
Look into the secondary market before you buy a timeshare. And in general, don't buy a timeshare because it's apparently like a huge problem. Like when you die, someone needs to own the timeshare, right? So
really?
Basically, you're giving it to your kids, and then they have the fees.
It's a bad decision that just haunts your family forever.
Yeah, that's right. That's exactly right. I'm trying to
like
think
the
of
Babadook.
I'm trying to think of it's like the Babadook. I'm trying to think of another analogy of like you buy this thing or you buy into this thing, and your family can't get rid of it.
Well, it's like a curse with a witch in the forest.
Yeah,
as which happens all the time.
Yeah,
it's a modern day curse.
It's a modern day curse. That's right. That's what a timeshare is. So. Anyway,
that sounds awful. Did you have any questions about South By? Because that's a thing.
Oh, no, I'm good. I don't want to hear about all those awesome movies you saw. But you talked about them last week on the podcast, right?
I did.
Yeah. Okay, favorite movie of South By?
Favorite movie? Probably Atomic Blonde.
Yeah.
It just maybe because I had no idea that was going to happen, and it was such a surprise, and it ended up being so awesome. And Baby Driver, it's good, but yeah, I've been waiting for it for so long, and it's not like it's definitely not the deepest Edgar Wright movie, but it's a lot of fun.
Yeah. Well, I am really looking forward to both of those movies. So, did you see The Disaster Artist by any chance? Or
I did not. Didn't have time.
I'm looking forward to that one as well. Glad you had a good time at South By, Devendra.
It was great. I missed a blizzard here in New York. Like, I was going to fly back the day of the blizzard, and I looked at my flights, and I was like, you know, maybe I'll just get home on Thursday. And I, you know, just called my wife and just apologized profusely, because I basically left her here stuck with the cats trying to deal with the blizzard for a couple days. So then I flew out on Thursday, and I got stuck in Atlanta. I had to call my wife. Like, you know, I think I'm just going to hang out with my parents for a couple days. So I was going to leave on Tuesday, ended up getting home on a Sunday. But it was actually all time well spent, more time in Atlanta and some, you know, surprise time with my parents. So it was all good.
Also, Edgar Wright just tweeted 20 minutes ago that mm-hmm. Baby Driver is actually coming out on June 28th, which is way sooner than the original August.
Whoa, release. Yeah, that was August.
Yep.
Huh.
People, they're so confident in it, they're moving it up. So I'm really
That's
psyched.
A good sign. Yeah, I can't wait to see that movie again. It has some of the best car chases I've seen in a long time, and no CG. So awesome. I tweeted it was his Fast and Furious, and it's pretty much that.
All right. So, Devendra, you were saying how South by is a better experience than Comic-Con. Tell me about that.
It is, just because I don't think it's as crowded, or at least the way it's broken up is that there's the interactive section, there's the film section, and the music, and some of that stuff overlaps, but music, I think, happens right at the end, so you kind of miss out on those whole crowds. And from what I hear from regulars and locals, too, like, they just avoid the city during the music section, too, because it's mostly really, really young people. And it makes everyone feel old and sad. So that was interesting. But yeah, I hung out and checked out some of the interactive stuff. There were a lot of good VR demos and things like that. And, you know, I did what I could during the film stuff. I did video interviews with Frank Oz and Ron Howard. And that was a lot of fun. Frank Oz is a mensch. Like, he is just such a nice guy. We even like included his outtakes in the video because he's just so great. Everything he does is amazing. Let me tell you a Frank Oz story, Dave.
Tell me a Frank Oz story. Let's wrap up on this.
Yeah. So we were getting ready to do our interview. He was getting a little tickle in his throat, and I wanted to get him some water. He was like, no, don't worry. I got this. And this is Frank Oz. This guy's been doing this for a while. So he just like took a second, cleared his throat with like the loudest cough I've ever heard. Like the decibel of like a roaring jet engine or something. It was very loud. And this happened in like the video studio area of South by 2, like where all the other sites and media organizations were recording things. So everybody just looked at us because we probably like fucked up their videos a little, or maybe they caught that in their sound. And then Frank Oz was fine. He was talking just fine. That's just, I thought in that moment we killed Frank Oz. That's how terrified I was.
All right. Well, I'm glad Frank Oz is still with us.
We didn't kill Frank Oz.
Spoiler, he's still alive. All right. Thanks for listening to the / Filmcast After Dark. We'll see you next week, guys.